Okay, welcome everybody to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. And among us all, let's do a moment of silence and then the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this week we are discussing the first part of a few paragraphs on step 12 because we divide step 12 into 2 weeks of meetings. And we have two panel members tonight. We have Randall and Bob, and they will introduce themselves when they speak tonight. And so let's see where we start with this. We're going to start on page 89, and of course step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So on page 89, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And I know Randall could be a tad nervous and he thinks I'm not going to call on him first because he's further away, but we'll let Randall start since Bob is out of town.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm Randall. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Randall.
And my sobriety date is March 3rd of 2015. And my home group is West Ghent over at St. Andrew's Episcopal. It's at 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. Thank you guys for having me, first off. And I'm glad that Debbie's up here. She's been my AA mom for about the past year. It's been awesome. She's always got little kernels of wisdom whenever I see her around. And I guess to start with, you know, it took somebody to have read this step before I came around, and somebody who was actively working this step to come and approach me when I came in here. All I was able to do for the first few days was raise my hand in a meeting and ask for help and ask for phone numbers. I knew that that was what I needed to do because I'd come around AA for, I don't know, three years plus, and made a decision each time to not work the steps. Knowingly, I mean, towards the end there, you know, I knew the solution was there. I saw you guys get better. You said you were getting better. You looked better. You know, you were able to string sentences together, you know, and it seemed like you were showing up in life. You know, I went to work today was something that I couldn't claim there for a while, you know, and you guys were saying you did that. So, okay, you had something that I wanted. But when I finally came in, when the 12 steps became my idea finally, you know, through just getting beat up through my own actions of drinking, you know, somebody was there with their hand out, having been through these steps, taking this to heart, carrying this message to me. That's a great thing. I don't make it here if somebody's not there with their hand out. So getting to what the reading actually says, you know, nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking. And that's a great promise, if I can live up to that myself. And this intensive work with other alcoholics, I've come to see that both ways as well. That's me working with a new guy. That's my sponsor and I working together. That's intensive work with another alcoholic. You know, a lot of times I like to focus on, am I reaching my hand out to the new guy? Am I holding up my debt to AA by working with other people? Sometimes I need to call my dang sponsor and let him know what's going on, you know, and that's intensive work when I sit down and read inventory with that guy, when I sit down and go over an amends I've been sitting on for 4 weeks in a row and just keep bringing that to him just so I can hear myself say it and hear him say, yep, you're still saying it. You ever going to do that thing or what? You know, and that's intensive work, but I can gloss that over by just doing step one and step 12 whenever I feel like it, you know. The middle stuff is where the guts at. Guts are at. And I love this line, and this has rang true for me the past couple of weeks. You can help when no one else can. I had an experience with this last week, and I hope it turns into something fruitful. I got a call out of nowhere. Actually, I got a text from an ex-girlfriend. You know how that goes, at least with me. I was like, oh, my God, what's going on here? Is there a kid? Do I owe her money? You know, that's where my mind goes right away. And so she texts me and she says, hey, do you have a minute? And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sweating immediately, you know. And I said, yeah, you know. She called me and she said, look, a friend of mine has a brother and he's talking about ending his life, you know, and for her to turn to me with that sort of thing is huge. And the even bigger thing, and it's through no work of mine, it's all through this program, is I can accept that and say, give me his number. How can I get up with this guy? I'm here to help however I can, you know. And that guy's alive today, you know, but just this disease showing up like that in that roundabout way was something pretty amazing. I got to talk to that guy 3 or 4 times in the past week, and his family can't get through to him, you know. If he's like me, he's run all his family to the brink of, you know, I don't know if I want to be around this guy. I've given up on this guy. I'm mad at this guy. They're somewhere in that spectrum if he's anything like me, all the people in his life, you know, and they're pleading with him to turn it around. He just doesn't know how to. But I'm uniquely useful when it comes to these things. That's what it's telling me here. When no one else can, I can be of service to this guy. And, you know, hopefully I can be. That's my hope for anybody that that reaches out, or that I can be of service to in this capacity, because it takes one to know one, you know. And if I can just get a little bit honest at first and willing to reach out and ask for help, That guy sounds just like me. I need help, man. Can I get your phone number? Can we talk? I don't want to talk to my family. I can't do that. I put them through the ringer, you know. But I can stand up as an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and help that guy out when he calls like that. And getting to the next paragraph, that's life has taken on a new meaning for me. That's what makes me feel good today. You know, I know that guy's going through it, and I know I can stand up and give him a hand up if that's what he'll have. And these couple of little, I consider them promises in that paragraph. You know, watching people recover, seeing them help other people, that's been amazing. I work with a couple of guys now, and you know, that initial, I got to fix me a little bit before I can go out and help other people. You know, they're getting through that, and they're in that that sort of mind shift just through doing the steps. What I find for myself, the essence of a spiritual experience, is just I think about everything differently now. Like the basis of my happiness is other people. A lot of times, that's starting to turn in their mind, and that's something really, really cool just to watch over the course of time. Because I know they don't see it. You know, I know that they're sitting there like, oh, my life is this and that today, and here's what I got going on today. This is my problem. You know, my boss is this and that. But there's moments where that corner's getting turned, and that's an amazing thing just to witness. You know, and that's not me either. That's just the program being all encompassing for people who have this problem. The last thing I'll say, and I'll let you talk for a little bit. It says, the last sentence is structured in a way that I can really, really get down with. It says, frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And newcomers comes first. I love you guys to death, all the people that have been here to help me out along the way and everything like that. But that sentence is structured in a way to bring my mind to newcomers first. And that's how I see that. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing. My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 17th, 1998. And my home group is We Are Not Saints out in Virginia Beach. And I actually have another home group. It's called the Aragona Group, also in Virginia Beach. I was just thinking on my way out here that I don't come to Norfolk that much, although in my drinking career, I used to go to South Norfolk a lot and visit, you know, those areas, and because I was in the midst of, you know, alcoholism and other addictions that almost drove me to death. I shouldn't be alive today, and I was just listening and loved what you had to say as far as, you know, helping others, because for me, my sponsor took me to the step through the steps, but it was early on that he started to tell me to start reaching out to the newcomer, and I just didn't understand this concept of helping others. I thought it was for, you know, goody two shoe people. You know, you know, reach out. You're all lovey dovey and this kind of stuff. I didn't have any kind of framework from my parents as far as helping others. It was all about me. And it took basically, you know, going to the end of almost killing myself that I finally came to believe in something that, you know, would save my life. And my sponsor put it in that context, you know, that helping others is so important to ensuring immunity from drinking. And I take it for heart from what he said, because to this day, I love him because he saved my life. I used to also come in here and get my paper signed, choose not to work the steps. My friend Patrick has such a lovely saying, you know, insanity is coming to AA and not working the steps. And I certainly fit that bill prior to coming in here this last time. Working with alcoholics and newcomers, you know, it says rigorous, intensive work. And to me, when I think about that, you know, early on when, you know, I was a youngling, so to speak, in the rooms, I didn't, again, understand, you know, that it takes a lot of work, because it's that work that basically you find yourself, and you find so much more about yourself, at least for me. I came to the conclusion I was just such an arrogant, self-centered person that, you know, childish-like, which the Big Book points out that we're childish with grandiose dreams, and I certainly would fit the bill for that. But when you hear that, you know, my impulse was to, okay, I'll have to calm down. Maybe I am a little bit that way. And it was something that I was able to stomach for the first time. And, you know, I don't dwell on that too much, but, you know, I try to do what I can, you know, because this is something that I don't ever want to give up. My sponsor would always say that, you know, there's some guys or some people in the rooms that, you know, they get sober and they don't quite do the 12th step. And he would say, those are the people that, you know, you probably want to stay away from. And what I took from that was that, you know, a lot of these people that don't help, they're not very happy. They're always in that psychobabble state of this is happening, and it's not living in the solution. And a lot of times that's what I love about literature meetings is because it keeps us in the moment. You know, what I'm talking about is the open discussion meetings, which is great, but sometimes we get off target, and the focus is on the newcomer. I mean, if I don't stay focused on the newcomer, you know, how am I supposed to, you know, keep it green? I mean, it, like he was saying, keeping it green is what it's all about. And, you know, all the high-class problems that I have now, you know, come to a halt when the guy that I'm talking to, who just got here thinking about blowing his head off, has all these things going on in his life. You know, he doesn't have a family, doesn't have his wife, doesn't have a job. I mean, that blows away my high-class problems, and it puts things back into perspective, you know. And that, for me, is, you know, what recovery's about. This, to me, is the most important step. And it's given back to me much more than I have put in. And I can never repay AA back, or you guys back, for getting the message to me. But it took a complete beating. Alcohol drove me to the brinks of death. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have listened. I would have still been that arrogant punk that walked in here, you know, when I was 18 and, you know, was blaming it on the cops, blaming it on your girlfriend. You know, back then we didn't have texting, but we certainly had the father on the other end of the line. You know, what'd you do to my wife or my daughter, you know, that kind of stuff. And, but anyways, it's about all I can comment at this point. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to continue on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Now, Randall, alcoholic. Here come the instructions, right? This is just laying it out just succinctly and precisely for me to... This is like the idiot's guide right here. This is what I need, is what I'm saying. And I really like to get ripped. I don't think I said that at the beginning, but I like to get ripped. It was like, hey, man, whatever's in your pocket, let's do it. And give me yours. Don't hold back. Give me all of it. And that's what kind of guy you guys got a year ago, showing up around here. So I've had the pleasure of meeting both of these guys probably multiple times. You know, the kind of quiet guy, and then the guy who's ready to talk. I'm the guy who's ready to talk. I don't know if y'all have noticed yet, but this is me, this first guy. I'm ready to tell you all my stories. You know, I ended up in jail this night, and I stole this from this school and this from that school, and you know, I was doing beer bongs from the third floor on the frat house and all that stuff. This is what I want you to go, because I mean, I've stacked up those stories specifically for being able to share them with you guys, you know? That's like where my prestige comes from, you know, and all that good stuff. But so that first guy's me, man. But by the time I got here, I was a different person. It had morphed me into just sort of like a quiet loner guy who wasn't capable of really communicating. I think that probably when I was approached with the question of, with this sort of line of questioning, it was like, man, I don't really care. Can you just help me? You know, and help me he did. He shared his story with me, and this guy was a Marine, and he had kids and a wife and everything like that. And I'm like, whatever, man, let's just do this. You know, because previously I had been waiting on the perfect guy. I had to find the right sponsor who was just like me, who I wouldn't BS, you know, and everything like that. He had to be able to hold me accountable. I'm a con man, you know. I'm a peddler of illegal goods. Like, I'm not a great guy, you know. And this guy seems a little too clean cut for me, you know, or this guy's too old, or this guy's too tall, you know, whatever the case was, I can come up with whatever, you know, but I finally just said, the heck with it, let's do it, man. And what ended up happening is this interview process that's laid out on 91, that happened over the period of like 6 months until this guy moved away, and I just got to know this guy, and he got to know me. At a level much beyond this. This is just a start, you know, when approaching the new guy. But his story was close enough for me to say, yes, I'm like you, you know. He drank like I did, and he thought like I did. And that was the big thing for me, was like when I was finally ready to do this thing, or whatever I thought was going on at the time. I didn't know what this thing was, you know, but I was just willing to say yes and nod my head. And this guy, I was picking up what he was putting down, you know. Eventually we had both of these times, my sponsor and I. We had times where we'd laugh hysterically over stuff that we'd done, our escapades, if you want to call them, throughout our drinking careers, because a career sounds prestigious. We've also had times where we're in serious moods and just recollecting things, you know. And this is much deeper than just the initial approach that he made to me. But this continued to happen, and it continues to happen with my sponsor today and the guys I sponsor today. I think it's just a thing. It's like, especially with me, I did so much stuff that I can't remember, but I'll see something that reminds me, and I'm like, listen to this, whoever's on the phone, you know, and we can laugh about that stuff, you know, we can have a good time, or we can be like, man, that was pretty messed up, maybe you should look at maybe making some amends or something like that. But I love that it's just clear-cut directions, and that's what you guys tell me, you know, and that's what the book says. These are clear-cut directions for how to recover from alcohol or alcoholism. And I mean, this is giving me precise instructions right here, you know, and really what it looks like for me today is just like it's laid out here in my own words, you know. It's not rocket surgery, you know, and just sort of lay out my timeline, man. And I'm not going to do that for y'all now. I don't want to bore you to death. But, you know, what I'm just establishing what it was like. What it was like. What it was like. What it was like. And if he's nodding his head yes, like I was when I came in here, I'm like, okay, man, you might have this thing, you know, but I've found a way out. Somebody showed me, and I can show you, you know, and take it or leave it. Had several dozen guys just leave it right there. That's fine, you know. I've left it right there multiple times myself. Thanks for the information. Get the heck away from me. That wasn't the precise wording, but it was, you know. And I think it just takes exactly what you were talking about, just getting beaten down. And you know, you guys had a lumpy mass here when I showed up, and were willing to work with that. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bob Alcoholic. Listening to you speak, I was thinking, I was kind of the quiet guy. I still am to a certain degree. I'm kind of introverted and kind of stick to myself. So when I first started bouncing in these rooms, I was definitely the same. Stay away from me. You know, I came here, I would park around the other side of the church, looking around, thinking that everybody is seeing, there goes Bob, he needs to go there. And over time, that started to, you know, erode, and I just didn't care, you know. And by the time that, you know, maybe I do have a problem, and when I got here this last time, you know, nobody said, no, you're not an alcoholic, you know. And I fit right in, and it was a number of years that I fought that title or that label, you're an alcoholic, and I just thought it was complete shame, you know. And I grew up in an environment that there was lots of shame. I mean, my mother's Japanese, my dad's American Indian, well, he's mostly Anglo-Saxon / Indian from West Virginia. And I always say this to try to get some humor, but I'm a Japanese hillbilly. And you know, it was just recently, I just got our hot tub moved out of our driveway after 6 months. So, driving to my neighborhood, you would see that, and my wife is finally off my back for that. But and I fought a lot of shame because I just didn't quite fit in with people. And growing up, you know, it was something that I always felt out of place. And I hear that a lot in the rooms. You know, people say that I just wasn't, you know, fitting in, or there was something that kept us from, you know, feeling good about ourselves. And as time progressed and finally getting here this last time, I realized that, you know, we have a dis-ease, you know, away from ease. And I always had that general feeling of anxiety. My father was an alcoholic. I've never had a sane reaction to, or a normal reaction to alcohol. I say this a lot, but, you know, when we were stationed in Groton, Connecticut, I remember having my first drink. It wasn't necessarily my first sip, but it was my first drink. And the reason I say that is because when I saw my father, who was drunk, get up, I just knew that he was sloppy and he might not know how much beer is in his can. And so when he would get back to watch his whatever sports or whatever, he wouldn't be able to tell. And when he did, my mind was just focused on the water, the glistening of the can. And back then they had to open up cans with, what was it, the
church
which key. Is yeah, whatever, the church key or the oil can.
Oh.
Whatever device. Mm-hmm. But I said it last night and I can't remember now. But anyways, when he got up, I chugged that beer. You know, that's my reaction to alcohol. It's never been to sip. It's always to put as much alcohol into my body as possible, in your pocket, that kind of same applied to other drugs and et cetera. That was my mindset. It was, you know, Ghostbusters, green ghost, you know, big mouth and just pour everything in. That's the way I fed my body, and it just sent me off to places that I just loved, that whole, you know, comfortably numb, you know. That was one of my favorite songs, still is. I'm trying to steer my son away from that because he plays guitar now, and I don't want him playing the stuff that I, you know, used to like. Can you play the Beatles or something softer? He's full force into some of the stuff that I used to listen to, but that's another story. But my mind will sometimes break off on a tangent that is probably due to excess, obviously, and getting into a lot of scrapes. I've done a lot of damage to my body, and one of them is my brain. It's periodically I got to watch what I do in the fall time, because, you know, sometimes I fall into this sad seasonal whatever disorder. I have to be careful of that because I've sustained a lot of brain damage over my drinking career. But getting back to the story and not being bored, not boring you guys. You know, whenever I see guys like myself, you know, that's alone, scared, and quiet, you know, I try to reach out to them. I wasn't boisterous, but I was always, you know, prior to getting in these rooms the last time, I was looking at the clock, you know, I was getting my paper signed, and you guys talking was like, you know, Charlie Brown's teacher in that muffled wah, 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 wah. I just, you know, wanted nothing of it, you know. And those are the guys that I'll still try to go to and talk to. And sometimes it's awkward because, you know, they don't want you to talk to them. But sometimes if you do reach out through that uncomfortableness, they'll start sharing. And I've had experiences like that. And it sometimes it worked out pretty good. But, of course, some of them will say, yeah, the cop was, you know, he's an idiot. I shouldn't be here. That was me. I don't judge any of that because that was me, you know. So I just let them go and pray for, you know, it works out for them. And if you come back, you know, it's a mental connection with my higher power and to try to, you know, help as many as I can. This is the only place that I can think of that I can talk about my escapades, and you guys clap and say, wow, yay. Yes. You know, I mean, where else are you going to go and tell our stories? I mean, you know, if you do that in a public forum or whatever, you know, they're going to want to put you in a straitjacket and lock you away for good. You know, I've been in straitjackets before, actually, but either way, you know, I can talk to you guys and you guys listen there and you understand. I mean, you guys speak my language. And, you know, working with a newcomer, you know, they fight. When they really listen, you know, once they get that beating, at least the beating that is similar to what I experienced, they start to get that sense that, hey, you know, I start to fit in. And, you know, you guys are my blood. I mean, you guys are my comfort. It's that ease and comfort. When I go to a meeting, I get that ease and comfort, you know, that I got with doing a line or, you know, getting that first buzz. You know, this is what has replaced that. And so it goes back to that definition, at least from my understanding, is, you know, we have a problem threefold, an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, and spiritual bankruptcy. And it's those three combinations is that, you know, we can't just stop drinking. We got to replace, you know, our spiritual bankruptcy through spirituality. We don't do these things, then that obsession doesn't go away. And so, you know, I used to think it was just stopping drinking. And that's what I believe that the man needs to hear, the man slash woman needs to hear. And I try to, you know, adapt myself to what a newcomer will say, you know, whether they're talking about escapades. Most of the time, it's not humorous. I stay away from the humorous side of things until I start to get to know them better. But, you know, for me, it's still awkward to reach out, but I do that, you know, because I was that guy that was quiet. I didn't want to say anything. I wanted you to stay away from me. But had somebody reached out, like my sponsor did the last time, and offered that glimmer of hope, I wouldn't be here. You know, I was thinking about putting a .40 caliber in the back of my head. Down here at North Shipko, when it used to be North Shipko, right by the bridge, Berkeley Bridge, and I didn't make it. I made it in here, and I'm lucky to be alive. That's all I got.
Thanks, Mike.
For sure.
All right, we're going to continue on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can. if he is not too alcoholic, but insists that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Randall, alcoholic. If you are satisfied that he is an alcoholic, a real alcoholic, this is something we talk about a lot with the guys that my sponsor and the guys that I sponsor. I have to be satisfied that this guy's an alcoholic, and then I'm going to proceed to explain to him about alcoholism. You know, because I wasn't convinced really even this last time that I was an alcoholic. I knew I was a heroin addict. I knew it. You know, I couldn't stay 2 hours without that. But the drinking thing, I don't know. You know, but once again, a guy came to me and explained to me some more about myself than I knew. You know, I didn't start shooting dope at 13. I started drinking booze at 13, and he explained to me about that first drink. First drink gets me drunk, right? Never got that. You guys have been saying it for years. You know, God, man, these people. With that, again. You know, but that first drink did get me drunk. The first time I ever drank, I drank to a blackout with me and one other buddy. We had a bottle of Cutty Sark. It's classy. Scotch. People drink scotch. I don't drink scotch classily. I get blacked out at 13. And then, you know, I went into that experience not even knowing what a blackout was, but knowing I was getting there. And that just started the ball rolling. You know, and so, maybe the first drink gets me drunk does start to make sense after a while, because I could leave the other stuff alone. You know, I could leave that stuff alone. For periods, you know, but I always come back to the booze. And then the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink, you know, I was looking for willpower for years in myself. You know, I went to a great high school around here, was good academically, played sports, I can play musical instruments, I can remember 10 numbers consecutively. If you just told it to me once, I could tell you in 10 minutes. All this stuff that doesn't really matter. But I was good at it. And I could not stop drinking and using drugs. I couldn't stop doing it. I was waiting for that willpower to kick in. Come on, man, you can do this. I think a lot of other people were waiting for that too, you know. In fact, they told me. You know, but now, when you guys started explaining this to me, when a guy, you know, on the phone, when I called and asked him to sponsor me, he was describing this to me from his own experience, and I couldn't do anything but nod my head, yes, you know, yeah, yeah, and he told me all this stuff. Now, he knew I'd been around AA, a retread, is you know, as I hear a lot. You know, I don't like to get the quote marks around me. Oh, you're a junkie. Oh, you're an alcoholic. Oh, you're a retread. You know, I don't like that stuff. I am. All those things, I think. So at least I'm convinced of it through my experience. All this stuff started to make sense to me for the first time in my life. That's why I can't muster the willpower, because my mind is screwed. My body reacts differently. And I don't have to worry about the science. I know the feeling. I know what happens. That light turns on. I'm ready to go. Give me one. I'm thirsty. And this is the way it was explained to me. And I love this sentence. Be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. I'm not going to tell you jack about you. Not a thing. I don't need to. Because if you're like me when you came in here, I know what's going on, and I can just tell you how I felt when I came in here. And you can do that puppet string, you know, head nod, and catch yourself doing it, and curse yourself, and then just keep doing it. You know, that's what I was doing. I was nodding my head like, geez, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. I drew my own conclusion, like it says in the book. You guys let me draw my own conclusion, diagnose myself as an alcoholic. Finally. Thank goodness you finally woke up to it, Randall. You've been the last to admit it and the last one to know it. You know? I love the little conditional. Maybe you can, buddy. If you're not too alcoholic. You know, I think that, I don't know why that's in there. I just think it's pretty, it's a good, you know, hey man, you're here by choice. If you want to go back out and drink again, go ahead, man, if you're not too alcoholic. Just sort of ride off into the shadows, you know. But, you know, maybe he can. Who am I to say that this guy is? All I got with me is my experience and my current misunderstanding of these words in the book, you know. This is just a great form. I was outside of a meeting the other day, and I'll go ahead and share this with you guys, right? Me and another fella, we're talking to two newcomers, and, you know, they had their heads going. The knot, you know, yeah, I hate to admit this stuff, but I'm doing it. And he was telling them about them. You're probably feeling like this. You're doing this. I bet you did this. And, you know, you probably drink too much and this and that and the third. And I listened to it. I don't like to use that pronoun. I don't like to use that. I like to come at guys with, I'm like this. This is my truth. And let me share that with you. Because if you were coming at me with, you did this, Randall, and you feel like this, I'll tell you where to shove those words, you know? And then I'd walk back out of this place. So I like the, just once again, some more instructions. It's telling me exactly what to do. Let him draw his own conclusion. Thanks.
Reading these paragraphs, what comes to my mind is, you know, trying to describe your struggles to the alcoholic when you get to that point where you think maybe the person is ready to listen, and trying to correlate some of your problems perhaps with, you know, the possible candidate alcoholic. Because I too don't, you know, I agree, you know, we can't label them. They have to draw their own conclusion. But one of the things I like to bring up, it's slightly humorous, but one of my accounts of trying to control my drinking, I came across this book. It was written by some hippies that described that, you know, the alcohol industry, there's a conspiracy, government conspiracy to not allow the alcohol industry to add vitamins to beer, wine coolers, or whatever. And so they formulated this plan to drink safely that I kind of bought and said, wow, this would be great. And basically, they said you should take some vitamins, an array of multivitamins and stuff. And I literally did that. I took vitamins. I carried this big bottle of vitamins to bars and stuff in my fanny pack. And each beer I drank, I would take a vitamin. And I was living in Chicago at the time, trying to, you know, find myself away from Rush Street, to those who've been to Chicago and other neighborhoods. But I still got in trouble. Other than making something very yellow, I still continued to get in trouble. I still continued to break relationships. And sometimes, you know, just showing that, you know, how I tried so hard, you know, my struggle to control my drinking, because I just wasn't ready to stop drinking. And I wanted to find every solution possible, and somehow it just slipped. Eventually, I stopped taking the vitamins, because I ended up in jails and, you know, stuff like that. That just said, well, that didn't work. And when I say that, a lot of times, you know, they'll laugh or they'll go, man, this guy's nuts. Just so, you know, I'm sure everybody here understands the great lengths that we go to drink and to not get that label, you know, to be an alcoholic. And I'm just so glad that in the end, when I finally got here, that nobody said, you're an alcoholic. The guy that became my sponsor did reach out and say, you need help. Because when I got to a meeting, I knew where to go. There was no secret route to an AA meeting, my last debauch. You know, and I went to this meeting, and there was a picture of Jesus. I'm not being religious, but it's ironic that I was thinking about blowing my head off. I went to a meeting, and there was a big frame picture of Jesus, and I sat down and buried my face into my hands. And I've only seen that a few times, but I'm very, compassionate to those that do that, because, when you're all clammed up and really in that miserable state of oneness to yourself, you just don't see any hope or anything like that. And, you know, for a person to finally be beaten down to submission like that, and then somebody reach out, and start talking to them, it's just what they need. Because, if somebody didn't do that, if it wasn't a warm, open, loving place, I wouldn't be here today. Absolutely not here today. And I was able to draw my own conclusion. And from that day on, when the guy reached out to my hand and gave me that glimmer of hope, I wanted what you guys had. I wanted this thing because I had an idea that, maybe I could be free of this misery and not have to end my life. And that's something I can't ever repay back. But I try. I try to, I do what I'm supposed to do. My sponsor said that, AA is not a buffet-style program. And at least that's the way it's presented to me. And actually, I thought it was a daily reflection passage that does talk about a buffet. And I always find that my sponsor is a plagiarist from his sponsor. I say that to my sponsees, that you're going to find out that I'm a plagiarist, so don't take too stock in what I have to say. It's been passed down, so that's all I got.
Thank you. Thanks, all right, we're on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles.
Randall, alcoholic.
Hey, Randall.
And some more instructions. And it's focused on my personal experience. I've had some good talks centered around this outside of meetings, after the meeting, talking to the guy you're talking about with his hands in his pocket who's trying to get out the door 3 minutes early. And it's turned into some really fruitful conversation. Because this is where I get the chance to tell somebody what's wrong with me. This is where I get to stress. Like you said, the three-part illness, and that's great. That's stuff that I can't grasp, 2 days into you guys' new language and jargon and your meetings and your little cult chanting stuff, or whatever's going on. I'm just really, really reluctant on all fronts when I come in here. But you beat me over the head with that enough over the course of 3 years, and me proving it to myself out on the street, that got traction. That I did have all these things, that I was like you guys. And I'm gonna skip probably talking about the doctor thing. I've never listened to a doctor in my life. You know, you go to med school for however many years, and I'm immediately thinking something's fishy with you. You know, I don't care about your paper on the wall. You know, your medical degrees and all your knowledge. You know, I can get by. You know, so a doctor couldn't have told me what you guys told me, how you guys told me. You know, and I don't even know if his opinion would have helped. I had to learn it for myself, and you guys had to show me the solution, the way out. And that's exactly what you did. The spiritual thing for me here towards the end was not like when I came in this last time, I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, I just kept saying, yeah, because I was out of options. I was done. So I didn't even care. I still don't know what my sponsor, first sponsor, or my current sponsor, I don't know what their spiritual entity is. I don't know that they know, but I don't really care. I know what I got going on, and I'm okay with that. That's exactly what it's telling me here, is that I can choose any conception, you know, however loose or however boxed in that conception might be. If it works, it works, and I'm going to roll with it. And so I had a great moment. This really filled me with pride, which is not about how I feel, I'm told. But this, I was listening to a fifth step, and just somewhere in that mix, the guy said to me, he said, I don't even know what your spiritual life is like, you know, or I don't know what your spiritual entity is. And I was like, man, I did something right. Thank goodness. Because I want to press all my beliefs and everything on you guys all the time. But that was a good feeling there. I haven't hijacked that guy's spiritual life. You know, he's had his own experience, and he's come through the steps to this point, and he's finding his way on his own, you know, with my help, you know, the help of a higher power. Within all that, my spiritual thing's completely separate from his, and I really, really, that made me feel good, that I wasn't just overstepping my responsibility of helping this guy through the steps and him having his own spiritual awakening. And I'm really, really reluctant to stress the spiritual feature freely until I've gotten to know a guy for a while. And then it's really just in loose terms. Just like it says here. I talked to a guy the other night, and I love it. This was something that was handed to me from my sponsor, you know, who was... I'll just tell you the story. This was that same story I was hinting at earlier, where Mr. Yu was over there pointing the finger, we got to talk about spirituality. Hey, man, do you believe in anything or anything like that? What's going on there? You know, and the guy said, oh, I'm atheist. Yes. And I got the opportunity to say, well, that's fine. There's room for you, too. You know, I don't have to pass judgment on anybody. It goes against what this thing's telling me right here to pass judgment on anybody. Why don't you just hop aboard, see if this works? You know? It doesn't matter what you believe, man. You know, do you believe in unconditional love that a mother has for a child? Yeah, I guess. Can you touch that? No. Do you believe in friendship? You know? Yeah. Can you touch that? Can you pin that down with words? Give me, you know, two sentences on that. Can't do it. You know it's there, though. And something like that can usually turn the corner in a conversation with somebody like me who's either militantly against what you've got to say or at the best reluctant to listen to you. But something like that was handed to me, and that's something I'm able to pass along to guys who are reluctant like me. It's a beautiful thing. There's room for everybody in here, and that's all I got.
Bob, alcoholic. when I think about what this paragraph reads is the luckiness or the I'm a lucky SOB to be here, because I've seen people over the years come in and basically go out and then die. And I know there's out there that, you know, don't even make it into these rooms and go out and get blitzed and then wrap their car around a telephone pole, kill somebody, and, you know, permanently institutionalized. You know, so whenever there's a woe me moment, I have to remind myself of that. And if I'm not coming to meetings, if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do, then I forget these things. I used to have things backwards. I used to say that we got broken forgetters. And I heard somebody straighten me out, you know, we got the best forgetters. You know? And I look at that, you know, in my drinking career, every time I bounce into these rooms, you know, I kind of, you know, I got my paper signed. I'm finally done with ASAP. I don't even know what they call it now, but, you know, Alcoholic Safety Awareness Program, you know, to get your license back and live with SR-22 for 5-7 years or however long it is, you know, very high insurance. But regardless, I lost my train of thought, so excuse me, but I was just thinking that, you know, all those things, that the price that I paid, I mean, this fellowship is, you know, we should be happy because we paid a membership that was so costly. I mean, if I could take back all the money that I spent on drugs, alcohol, you know, I'd be in a pretty good place. And so I think this, the membership that we partake with this fellowship is one that's amazing, because you find a way to make something negative good, you know, turn our, you know, things in our dark closet to something useful, and that's useful for the newcomer, the person that needs to hear these things and is used in a positive light. And I used to always get mad with my sponsor. He goes, God doesn't make crap. He makes use of everything. And if I look at that world that way, then it's a much happier place than the mental twist that my mind can do, because I'm not spiritually fit. I know for a fact that I have gone to the place of complete hopelessness, and that is one motivator to this day that keeps me moving on this journey. And every time I see somebody that's like that, you know, and it's just an amazing thing to be able to talk their language and then finally catch their eye. You know, they get curious, you know, and that was me. You know, I finally got here and reached out, and then I wanted more. And then, you know, it was pretty conclusive that I belonged here, you know. Quack like a duck, probably a duck. I know there's exceptions, but for me, you know, I quacked like a duck many years ago, but I was just too stupid and stubborn to see those things. And when I do that, sometimes, I mean, there's a comparison that the newcomer might be able to make. I never was agnostic. I mean, I never was atheistic. I was maybe agnostic. I grew up in a household that my impression of a higher power was one of fire and brimstone, and that scared me. So I thought that I just wasn't worthy enough. And all the things that I did kind of validated my view of myself and basically led me to the belief that, you know, I'm a piece of crap. And, you know, my sponsor said that word or that phrase that goes on and taps you on the head and says you're a piece of crap, that's a disease. It wants you dead. It wants to isolate you. It wants you to keep you away from the truth. And that's why we need a spiritual program to basically survive those thoughts and to rid ourselves of those thoughts. And when he put a voice to what I'm experiencing in my head, you know, it made sense. And so I'm going down the road and I feel like flipping the guy off that just cut me off. I have to remind myself, you know, that's the disease basically wanting to make me so angry that I remove myself from my spiritual principles. And that's why I have to do something about it. I still have, you know, moments where I'm not exactly the friendliest guy in the world, but I don't have a knee-jerk reaction to drink. I've gone through some tough things in sobriety, and and the beautiful thing was my knee-jerk reaction was not to drink, not to use, not to get out. Instead, it was going back to what I have to do, pray, talk to you guys, call my sponsor, go to a meeting. All these things that I kind of rolled my eyes at when I would hear occasionally at meetings when I didn't get it. And I'm just so grateful that I was rendered to that state of being able to be teachable, and my life basically was reborn. And that's all I got.
I'd like to thank Randall and Bob for sharing.
We're going to start the baskets going around. And I also have to apologize because I didn't finish that paragraph if you were following along in the book, because it was on the second page and I still don't follow directions. So. All right. So every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And I have an announcement. Our home group will be having our supper and a speaker in 2 weeks, March the 7th. Woo-hoo! What's happening, would say? let's see, we have Mark G. coming from Richmond. He'll speak at 6 o'clock. Bring a dish if you wish to eat. And he'll speak at 7 right here in this room. And we have some flyers. Feel free to take some to your meetings, especially if you're from another meeting that may not happen. Any other AA announcements? I see a hand. Yes, Ashley.
How do you imagine an alcoholic?
Yes.
My home group downtown in Silver Town became a screen action event on Saturday, March 12th from 11 p.m. Two speakers held by a questioning period. It's also a breakfast potluck. We're providing campaign some bacon and you throw it out too long.
Thank you.
All right, and for anyone that's new in the room, we talk a lot about home groups, and Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. And home group members, please raise your hand. And that leads right into newcomers again. We would like to get to know you. If there's anyone here within their first 30 days of sobriety, if they'd like to introduce themselves by their first name only. I see a hand.
Hi,
I'm
Melissa.
Welcome.
I'm back.
John Paul.
Hey.
John Paul.
Kevin.
Kevin.
Hey, Tony.
Awesome. We're all in the right place. Now, we have some literature on the table over there. The books are for sale. The big book that we're reading from is for sale over there. We have literature that's for free. There is a newcomer packet, and the new meeting list from January of this year are over there. Also, sponsorship with another baby. It's yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And also, if you have lots of sponsors, awesome. If you have any questions about sponsorship, I'll be up at the table after the meeting, and I'll be glad to answer any questions about sponsorship. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside our front doors here and stay away from the front of the church. Kind of go over there on the side where the bicycle rack is, because we do share the building. All of our meetings are recorded. We have a website, simpleactions.net, and you can see our upcoming events and hear all of the speakers on there. And my eager friend David is going to read the last few pages on page 164, but I skipped a paragraph. Hold on. We have to thank our speakers once more time. Soul for the meeting after the meeting, which is on close. David will wrap it up for us.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Amen.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
And thanks everybody for being here. We close with the Lord's Prayer.
Bye.
How are you doing?
Our Father.
Not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,